Well, here we are, and welcome back to Archaeology News Weekly. I am actually keeping up with it now. This news is brought to you, of course, in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, so to view these details on all the sources used, see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. So now, halfway through the first month of 2012, where are we? Well, we've got a new theory on the disappearance of the Neanderthals. It's only a few days in and we've already got our first theory on Neanderthals. A Bronze Age boat is to take to the Cornish waters after 4,000 years. And an Indian megalithic site project has begun. Oh, terrible things happening in Ireland. Achohenge may be built over a prehistoric site. Ancient bones have been discovered in Milton Keynes and 5,000-year-old pottery on a Scottish island. We've got the remains of a prehistoric hut found in southern Texas, and Yorkshire is appealing to try and save two Iron Age gold torques. We're looking a bit more at the earliest modern humans, and a bit of a mystery here, a rare ancient artifact is found in Malta. We finish off with, yes, Stonehenge Story of the Week. Stonehenge enters the 21st century. I wonder if anyone told it that. So without further ado, let's get on with the first story. A new theory has been put forward by a team from the Arizona State University and the University of Colorado Denver on the fate of Neanderthals. The team has recently published a paper on the findings, which were then the results of computational modelling. Michael Barton, a pioneer in the area of archaeological applications of computational modelling, explained, I'm glad he did, what it all meant. To better understand human ecology, and especially how human culture and biology evolved amongst hunter-gatherers in the late Pleistocene of Western Eurasia, that's around 126 to 9,500 BCE, they designed theoretical and methodological frameworks that incorporated feedback across three evolutionary systems. These are biological, cultural, and environmental. Their theory is based on the fact that Neanderthals were more intelligent than originally thought and adapted rapidly to changes in their environment. So when the more populous Homo sapiens arrived in their midst, they adapted and survived by interbreeding with them and eventually became absorbed into their society, ceasing to become a recognisable separate species. Well, as you can imagine, this paper has already provoked quite a vocal reaction both for and against. Why not get involved yourself with this one? Now, we have been looking at fabulous finds in Cambridgeshire where they found six Bronze Age canoes and some remarkable archaeology there as well, which you'll be able to see actually in the Past Horizons magazine, www.pasthorizons.com. But just off the Cornish waters, we're going to have the remains of three Bronze Age ships taking to the seas again. Between 1937 and 1963, the remains of three Bronze Age ships were found on the foreshore of the River Humber on the east coast of England. Now, a professor from Exeter University and Robert van den Noort have teamed up with a professional boat builder to recreate one of the ships. Bronze Age tools will be used to create a 16-metre boat out of oak planks that have been stitched together with yew stems. Professor van den Noort is quoted as saying that because none of these boats has ever been found as complete, the project will try and understand just how they were constructed, how to steer the boat, how fast it can go, and also to try and understand how the crew used paddles, as there was no signs of sails on any of the boats. The other one, which is the most important, of course, is to work out just how watertight it is. The boat will be constructed at the National Maritime Museum in Falmouth in Cornwall and will form part of the 2012 Cornwall and the Sea in the Bronze Age exhibition. That is going to be one to watch out for. Now to India, Discovering Idukki, a project to explore and document the rich heritage of the Kerala district in the very southern tip of India, has now begun. In the first phase, a heritage museum will be opened in Panuva by April of this year. Archaeological explorations will be conducted at various dolmens in Marayur and sites also where burial urns have been excavated. especially in the high ranges. Mr. T. Rajesh, officer in charge of the project, said that the study may open unknown chapters of the Kerala spice trade during the Stone Age and during later periods, adding that the Muzaris heritage has a strong link to the hill country behind because cardamom is indigenous to that area. So far, only individual studies have been done at megalithic sites in the district. The project envisages site protection and preservation, as well as possible restoration of dolmens damaged by human interference. That pesky human interference. Rajesh said that excavations in Idukki will provide valuable data on life during the megalithic period of India. Now to another bit of a megalithic tale, but not, I'm afraid, so positive. Teresa McDonald, who's the managing director of the Achill Archaeological Field School, has voiced her objections over the Achill Henge structure, which was built on Achill Island in November by Joe McNamara. The archaeologist believes that a prehistoric site could be less than 500 metres from where the Achill Henge is now standing. Miss McDonald said that we're worried about the archaeological site mostly because it could be covered by this new one. The archaeological site is on the Sites and Monuments record for County Mayo, but nobody knows how extensive it is. And in theory, it could stretch under where they've just built this new concrete henge. Achill Henge is a Stonehenge replica, and according to a spokesman for Mayo County Council, was built without planning permission. Towering nearly 5 metres from its base, the modern structure is 30 metres in diameter and has a circumference of close to 100 metres. And to build it, over 30 articulated trucks arrived from Galway carrying precast concrete blocks. McDonald explained how McNamara supposedly did not adhere to proper procedure when planning and constructing Achill Henge. Had he done so, he would have been required to partake in an archaeological survey of the area, and the results of the survey would have influenced the permission for building. The builder for Achill Henge and Mayo County Council are set to head to court on January the 31st, not long now. However, the council indicated it will seek an order forcing McNamara to take the structure down. Whew, this is going to be exciting stuff. Now, almost exciting stuff. This is to a friend of mine who's the curator of Milton Keynes. Anyway, here we are. A set of bones, which could be thousands of years old, has been discovered on a building site in Milton Keynes. The human remains were uncovered by a digger driver at the Taylor Wimpey development in Oakridge Park. Forensic archaeologists established that the remains were not, fortunately, recent in origin. An investigation will now determine whether the site in Heathley Chase is of historical significance. The bones are now in secure storage after being recovered and handed over to Milton Keynes Council. Secure storage, what are they worried they're going to sort of try and break out? Scary. Council's senior archaeological officer, Nick Crank, said that at the moment, the only certainty was that skeleton was beyond the age that the police would be interested in them. But it's highly possible that they were much, much older. Recovered during the excavation was a portion of a lower jaw and teeth that show extreme wear. So it looks more like where you're within an archaeological context where people had a much coarser diet. We never know, actually, at the moment. He revealed the council hoped to have further archaeological investigations carried out to see if there was any remains or artefacts which could shed more light on it. There's no graveyard known on the site, and it could just well be an isolated burial. So we'll hopefully see what comes of that as the months go by. Now back to my own homeland of Scotland, where last year fishermen, beachcombers, divers and islanders in the Western Islands of Scotland were asked for information on where archaeologists might find ancient sites along the shoreline. The project involves the Royal Commission on the Ancient and Historical Monuments of Scotland. Whew. Fortunately, they are called ARCAMS for short, and Wessex Archaeology Coastal and Marine, as well as Historic Scotland and the Council of the Western Isles. The experts are now working on confirming, dating and analysing sites and relics that they've been alerted to, along with aerial photographs of the locations. Finds include Neolithic pottery found by a diver in Loch Anduna on Lewis, and a previously unknown complex of fish traps and evidence of occupation south of Loch Borsdale on South Uist, which have also been found. Dr. Jonathan Benjamin of Wessex Archaeology, Coastal and Marine, said local knowledge was key to the first major study of the Western Isles marine archaeology. As full-time archaeologists, they just don't have the time to be out day after day, year after year, observing the shorelines. That's why they're relying on the knowledge of local people who live and work on or near the sea, and who might notice something out of the ordinary, either on a fishing net or perhaps at low tide. The Western Isles have been giving up their ancient secrets in recent centuries. Udal, a site on North Uist, has evidence of occupation for every age from the Neolithic to the 20th century. In fact, 21st century now as well, I suppose. An amazing site, the Udal. Well, we're going to head off to Texas now, where last month workers preparing San Antonio's Mission County Park for construction found the remains of a prehistoric hut that had burned down 3,500 years ago. The people who manage the county facility said that the structure dates from the late Archaic period. I see people, I should have said archaeologists really there, 3,000 to 1,000 BCE. Evidence is being analysed by the state archaeologist down at the University of Texas. Yeah, officials are waiting, though, on a second round of carbon dating to establish exactly when the structure burned down. It's not known exactly what the structure was used for, either. And in fact, not even sure about dimensions. However, in that time frame, the only structures that have ever been found previously are of bent poles, creating a form of domed hut. However, this construction is made of upright poles. So that's going to be our first for this period, and the carbon dating is going to be incredibly important to work out just how far back this type of hut was made. A few artifacts, I'm afraid, have also been found at the location. There were some chips of flint that obviously came from dart points, but very little else. Now to an appeal here. It's two gold bracelets found near Tadcaster in Yorkshire have been declared the first Iron Age gold jewellery ever found in North England. The torques were found within metres of each other on separate occasions nearly a year apart by two metal detectorists, Andrew Green and Sean Scott. Both are made entirely of gold. The first has been dated to 100 to 70 BCE, while the second could be a little bit older. They are very similar in appearance, with the main body made up of two wires twisted together. But the Yorkshire Museum is appealing to the public to help raise £60,000 to make sure that they stay in Yorkshire. Similar bracelets have been found in Britain, mainly in Norfolk, which was the home for the Akini tribe. Until now, the furthest north torques have been found was in Nottinghamshire. The torques are very similar in appearance to those in the Snettisham Hoard in Norfolk, raising the possibility that the bracelets were spoils of war, or a gift, or perhaps even used in trade. The site and the nature of the finds has also intrigued experts, with torques previously found in hoards rather than just single pieces. There's also no history of them being found in water, suggesting that they may have washed away from an original burial site. Both will be on show until the 31st of January at the Yorkshire Museum. So it's worth getting along if you can and having a look. The museum needs a further £24,000 by that date to make sure the first one stays in Yorkshire. If you want to try and help out on that, just Google Yorkshire Museum appeal and torques, T-O-R-C. Now, two, quite an interesting article here. Paleoanthropologists agree that modern humans evolved in Africa about 200,000 years ago, yet fossil evidence for the earliest examples is scarce. One problem is the difficulty in recognising truly modern humans in the fossil record. At this time, many thought to be early members of our species possess a mix of modern and primitive traits. For some, this means our species once had a greater range of physical variation than today. For others, that more than one species of Homo may have lived in Africa at the same time. Despite these challenges, there are several candidates for the earliest known members of our species. There's Homo 1 and 2 from around about 195,000 years ago. Back in 1967, a team led by Richard Leakey discovered possible Homo sapiens fossils in the Kibish Formation near the Omo River in southern Ethiopia. Reanalysis in 2005 revealed that they are 195,000 years old, the oldest fossils assigned to Homo sapiens. Researchers largely agree that Omo 1 was a modern human. Flat face, fully formed chin, high forehead and globular brain case. They are less certain, however, about Omo 2, with its thicker cranial bones and sloping forehead. Now, Herto, which is about 160,000 years ago, Tim White of the University of California at Berkeley and colleagues unearthed three largely complete skulls in the Middle Awash region of Ethiopia in 1997. They appear quite modern, but because certain traits are outside the range of modern variation, they were placed into their own subspecies. Finally, we've got Cafés and Skoul from around about 100,000 years ago. Now we're into the Levant region. In the 1930s, researchers working in these caves in northern Israel found the remains of at least 30 individuals, a few purposefully buried. Some suggest they represent an early migration out of Africa, but like Omo 2, some of them are very difficult to classify. The primitive traits in this population might have resulted from interbreeding with Neanderthals, who also lived in the region at the time. The thing that I'm enjoying about this at the moment, and I think this is going to be one of the stories of 2012, is how we are starting to understand more the complexities of our evolution, if we're not actually understanding fully our evolution itself. And now, the discovery of a small fragment of agate stone is causing much excitement, as a 13th century BCE cuneiform inscription on it. Not so surprising, you might think, for an artifact found in Mesopotamia, as the inscription shows that it was part of an object dedicated to the Mesopotamian moon god, Sin. But this fragment was found in Malta. Yes, Malta. An excavation has been conducted at the site of the megalithic temple from the late Neolithic age, known as Tasilg, which is an ancient sanctuary site. The excavation team is led by paleontology professor Alberto Casella from the University of Rome. The main question is how such an article could have found its way so far west and to such a remote region. One theory is that it may have been looted in a military campaign at a much later date and passed through hands of merchants and traders. Another theory centres around the high value which had been placed on the object, which may suggest that the Tasil sanctuary site could have had more significance and a greater longevity than previously thought. Now, two new 21st century inventions are helping us to understand and visit the wonders of Stonehenge from the comfort of our own homes. Yes, this is the last story, and it's our Stonehenge story of the week. Google Under the Earth is an extension of the well-known Google Earth and adds archaeological layers to the base levels. Seeing Beneath Stonehenge has been developed as part of the Stonehenge Riverside Project, using data gathered by the combined teams from the universities of Sheffield, Manchester, Bristol, Southampton and London. The project has been funded by the UK Arts and Humanities Research Council, and the software can be downloaded here at the blogs.bournemouth.ac.uk/seeing-beneath-stonehenge, and requires, of course, the Google Earth software installed as well. But you don't have to have a PC if you want to explore Stonehenge on the move. The University of Huddersfield, also in the UK, and the web developers at Ribui have developed an iPhone app called the Stonehenge Experience. This app has gone to town with voiceover commentaries, enhanced reality, and even views of the henge when it was complete. Robert Till, the modeller of the app and a senior lecturer at the University of Huddersfield, is quoted as saying that creating the sound of Stonehenge as it was when it was first built was a massively interesting challenge. When put together with the iPhone app, it makes for an absorbing and immersive experience and allows people to see and hear Stonehenge as it was 5,000 years ago. You can get the app, of course, from the App Store, and what you'll be looking for there, of course, is an app called Stonehenge Experience. Talking of apps and downloads, you're not forgetting that Stonepages itself has an app as well. Yes, you can get the Stonepages app and listen to the news on your iPhone, or get up-to-the-minute news as it happens as well. There's only one other site to talk about that's worth talking about, of course, and that's Past Horizons. Past Horizons will give you all your news daily, some amazing archaeological articles, and of course, opportunities to get involved in archaeology around the world on the World Projects database. Finally, you need something to take on these projects? Well, Past Horizons Archaeology Tool Store has just been redeveloped and is easier to use than ever. So have a little gander at www.pasthorizons.com/shop. Anyway, remember, more can always be found at Stone Pages at news.stonepages.com. So thank you very much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope indeed you return again to us next week.